お名もおまじゅて忘れはよ。
Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna, text 16. Translation. This is Uddhava speaking, remembering Lord Krishna in the association of Vidura. When I think of Lord Krishna, how he was born in the prison house of Vasudeva, although he is unborn, how he went away from his father's protection to Braj and lived there incognito out of fear of the enemy, and how, although unlimitedly powerful, he fled from Mathura in fear, all these bewildering incidents give me distress.
Purport.
Because Lord Sri Krishna is the original person from whom everything and everyone has emanated. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, Tanmaya Sita. Nothing can be equal to or greater than him. The Lord is supremely perfect, and whenever he enacts his transcendental pastime as a son, a rival, or an object of enmity, he plays the part so perfectly that even pure devotees like Uddhava are bewildered. For example, Uddhava knew perfectly well that Lord Sri Krishna is eternally existent and can neither die nor disappear for good. Yet he lamented for Lord Krishna. All these events are perfect arrangements to give perfection to his supreme glory. It is for enjoyment's sake. When a father plays with his little son, and the father lies down on the floor as if defeated by the son, it is just to give the little son pleasure and nothing more. Because the Lord is all-powerful, it is possible for him to adjust opposites such as birth and no birth, power and defeat, fear and fearlessness. A pure devotee knows very well how it is possible for the Lord to adjust opposite things, but he laments for the non-devotees who, not knowing the supreme glories of the Lord, think of him as imaginary simply because there are so many apparently contradictory statements in the scriptures. Factually, there is nothing contradictory. Everything is possible when we understand the Lord as the Lord and not as one of us with all our imperfections. Om Jnana Chimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is an appropriate verse for this weekend in which their lordship, Sisi Radha, Girinadi, will move to their new abode, because this verse explains the apparent contradictions of Lord Sri Krishna to ordinary vision. And in fact, even the pure devotees who know Krishna well, they also become bewildered by the Lord's wonderful pastime. And Uddhava, who is certainly so close to Krishna, Uddhava is known as Mantri, the advisor of the Lord. He's the friend of Lord Krishna, and he gives advice to Krishna. Yet, here he is speaking to Vidura. This is after the departure of the Lord from this world, from the ordinary vision. He's speaking to Vridura, let's think about Krishna's pastime. That is the joy of a devotee, to think about the Lord's Leela, to meditate on that Leela, and to let all the details of the pastime sink into our consciousness. Buddha is teaching us how to do that. He's showing it's very practical. Thinking about Krishna, it's not difficult. When you have affection for someone, naturally you'll think of that person all the time. Through the process of bhakti yoga, we indeed revive our natural affection for Krishna. Therefore, the more devotional service that we're able to offer to Krishna, and Krishna finds it pleasing, then the more we'll be able to think of Krishna. Uddhava is letting us know the various currents in the ocean of thinking about Krishna. He's saying, look at it this way. He was born in a prison house, although he's unborn. Fear itself is afraid of him, yet he left his father's protection in Mathura to go to Braj and live there incognito. And he's unlimitedly powerful. He's Anantavirya, yet he fled from Mathura in fear during the attack of Kalyavana and Jarasandha combined. What is Buddha's conclusion? All these bewildering incidents give me distress. Why distress? This is not material distress, dukkha. Buddha is not affected by sukha dukkha, material happiness and distress, those dualities that plague the conditioned soul. No, Buddha is saying, all these bewildering incidents give me distress. Why? Because even though I know the Lord is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he plays the part so well in his pastimes that it brings out these feelings of concern. It brings out these feelings of amazement. Because even though I know he's God, he does his leela so well. Sometimes mundane persons can object. What is the big deal in Krishna's pastime? If you accept him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's no suspense. After all, you say God can do anything. So why are you all so attracted to Krishna's pastimes when you know in advance he's always going to win? Uddhava is giving you insight into bhakta-bhava, the emotions of a devotee. He's in effect saying, I know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but when he does his leela, it's so masterly that I get caught up in it and I react with my emotions. Oh, Krishna's doing this. Oh, Krishna's doing that. Because the Lord's leela is so super excellent. It's just something for us to think about. How the Supreme Personality of Godhead stirs the ocean of devotional emotion. Now, this weekend, we have also a contradictory event. How can we move the immovable? How it is that the Lord, who has no limitations, he's upramaya, immeasurable, how can the Lord fit into a temple building? And how is it that we can dress the Lord, garland the Lord, when Krishna has no length or breadth? He's beyond the range of our material senses, adokshita. And certainly, how is it that we can move him? These are contradictions. But they're all resolved through devotion. First of all, Krishna is everywhere. So why are we giving so much attention to move the Lord from one place to another when there's no place that the Lord is not. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everywhere you look, everywhere you turn, even you yourself, the one who looks, that is Krishna's energy. Parasya Shaktiya Vividaya Shuryate. You cannot find anything that is not Krishna's energy. So why is it then that we are giving so much attention to apparently moving the Lord from one place to another? Krishna kindly allows us to do that so we can develop our love. He is everywhere, but he agrees to especially manifest because of the love of the devotee. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Maya Jitam Nidam Sarvam Jagara Vyakta Murtina Mastani Sarva Bhutani Nachaham Teishu Vastita. My impersonal manifestation, that means me as my energy, it's spread everywhere. Everything rests upon me, but personally, I'm not there. Now, what does Krishna mean when he says, personally, I'm not there? It can be taken in two ways. It means that his impersonal manifestation as his energy is not him personally. Therefore, if you bang the deck, you're not banging Krishna. But then again, without Krishna, this podium cannot exist. So Krishna is not there personally because the material energy creates an impression that things are separate from Krishna. But then again, you can look at it another way. Krishna is there for those who can see him. When he says, Nataham Teishu Vastita, I'm not there, he's also meaning, I'm not there because you can't see me, but actually I am there, if you have the eyes tinged with love. So this is a contradiction. The Lord will allow us to see him. He'll allow us to move him. Although he's unseeable by ordinary vision, he's immovable, he's immeasurable. How's he going to fit into the new temple building? You can think like that. Mother Yashoda had to cope with that reality when she wanted to bind Lord Krishna with a rope. How do you get a rope around someone who has no beginning or end? How do you get a rope around someone who is immeasurable? But finally, Krishna agreed out of love, and she was able to bind him. Not exactly with the rope, but as we sing in the Damodarasa prayer, Bhakti Bhadham, Krishna was bound by her devotion. We can see in the Lord's pastimes, both in the Braj Leela and the Dwarka Leela, that sometimes the Lord moves for this reason or that reason. Sometimes it seems that circumstances warrant the Lord to move his abode, his residence. Just like in Braj, what happened after the Yamala Arjun trees crashed to the ground and the two sons of Kuvera, Manigriva and Nalakuvara, appeared shining from the trees, and then they were given the Lord's benediction. Meanwhile, all the cowherd men in Braj came running to the spot where the trees crashed, because they heard this sound like thunderbolt. And they arrived there, and they saw the two trees laying on the ground. They saw baby Krishna nearby, and immediately they were filled with distress. What has happened? How could this happen? What has done this? Men are very pragmatic, so instead of first having a complete emotional reaction, part of their reaction was, who did this? How could it happen? Where was the origin of the danger? Because immediately they want to make sure that the thing can't happen again. So they immediately went into like an investigative mode. Could Krishna have knocked these trees down? Not possible. He's just a little boy. Therefore, perhaps it was a demon. We have to understand. We're tired of Krishna being attacked by so many inexplicable things. What to do? So they turned to the cowherd boys who were there with Krishna for an explanation. And the cowherd boys explained, Krishna knocked it down. There's no doubt about it. He knocked the trees down. We saw with our own eyes. He did it. And then two shining men came out of the trees and they offered prayers to Krishna. The cowherd men, almost all of them, couldn't believe it. These are little boys. What do they know? But then a few of them were thinking, They told Nanda Maharaj, your boy is not ordinary. He could have done it. Might be possible. After all, Gargarishi did predict your son could be equal to Narayan. So maybe it was possible. While the debate was going on, Nanda Maharaj was thinking, Yashoda Mai, why did she find Krishna like this? Krishna was simply exchanging love with her when he was doing all that mischief. She misunderstood. But he's smiling and he untied Krishna. And then the elder ladies of Vrindavan, they take little Krishna and they begin to sing to him and clap their hands so that he'll dance just like he's under their control. Meanwhile, the cowherd men, the older ones, decided, we're going to have a meeting. Maybe we have to move. So many disturbances have come here in Mahavan. Maybe there's another place. Should we consider relocating? So they had an Ishtagoshti gathering of saintly persons, residents of Vrindavan, to discuss what should be done. The meeting spokesperson was Upananda, the elder brother of Nanda Maharaj, and he eloquently summed up the situation. There have been so many disturbances here in Mahavan. There was Putana, there was Chinavrata, there was the cart demon, one after another. We have to think of the benefit of Krishna and Balaram. This is the underlying theme in Upananda's presentation. Again and again, he would repeat, we must think for the benefit of Krishna and Balaram. We should go to another place. And he made that conclusion in a very eloquent way. Because after all, he's living in Vrindavan. He doesn't say like, this is a bad place, let's go to another place. No, this is the holy dham, the special private abode of the Lord. So what did Upananda say? Very eloquently he said, the best good that we can do for this place is to leave it. Very beautiful way of saying, let's go. After all, it is Krishna's personal abode. You cannot say, this is a bad place, let us go. No, he said, the best good that we can do for this place is to go. So all the cowherd men cried out, sadhu, sadhu, well spoken, well spoken. Immediately they began to pack their cart for relocating and they readied their journey. Upananda had explained, I know a very nice place in between Nandeshwar and Mahavan. That place is called Vrindavan. There'll be so many nice grasses and trees, small trees, and all the things that cows, they like to nibble on. They'll be there in abundance. There'll be tall mountains there, especially Govardhan. There'll be very nice places where our gopas and gopis can set up their residences. I recommend we go there. So that's where they were going. And everyone got on their cart, absorbed in the bliss of relocating all to give benefit for Krishna and Balaram. The gopis would chant the glories of the Lord as they were on the cart, and Mother Rohini and Mother Yashoda, they would hear those glories of Krishna, and they would feel very inspired. They had Krishna and Balaram on their own cart, and they held their little children and began to talk to them and look in their faces. And in this way, such a beautiful scene was created of vatsalya rasa, parental love. Then they got to the new place, and they made their bullock cart in the form of a half moon. Not a full circle, a half moon, because in that particular spot there were thorn bushes on one side. So they used that as part of their circle, and they put their cart around the other direction. And in this way, they set up shop in Vrindavan. Then Krishna and Balaram looked out, and they felt Uttama Priti, the supreme affection, because everywhere they looked, what did they see? Giri Govardhan, the banks of the Jamuna River, the beauty of Vrindavan. In this way, they were so satisfied by the move from Mahavan to Vrindavan. Of course, as Uddhava says here, it seems the Lord moves because of fear. But how could that be when fear itself is afraid of the Lord? Krishna does these things just for enjoyment. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, all these events are perfect arrangements to give perfection to His supreme glory. It is for enjoyment's sake. So Uddhava can easily balance all these apparent contradictions. Birth, no birth, power, defeat, fear and fearlessness. Still, Krishna does His Leela dramas so wondrously that Uddhava confesses, I get bewildered, I get so caught up in it. What was another time the Lord relocated? You can see that in Dwarka Leela. The Lord and His family, they were in Mathura. He had left Vrindavan, apparently. And in Mathura, also there were so many attacks. Srila Prabhupada wants us to note that if while Krishna is in Vrindavan or in Mathura, there's so many attacks, we shouldn't be disturbed by the so-called disturbances that are a natural part of the material world. We should know that we continue with enthusiasm, and somehow these disturbances, they don't stop the forward march of bhakti. But we should be practical. And he uses Vrindavan and Mathura as an example. Just see, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is there, and still there are apparent disturbances. So, a devotee has to know that in this world, there'll always be encouraging things and discouraging things simultaneously. That's the nature of this world. But the devotee goes forward with his or her devotional service. So Krishna was in Mathura, and he perceived a huge attack coming. One Yavana, named Kalyavana, decided to besiege Mathura with 30 million Yavana soldiers. This Kalyavana was especially intent on destruction because he had been set up by Narada Muni. Narada Muni told Kalyavana, go where the Yadus are. They are a suitable match for you. How did Kalyavana come about? Garga Muni had become a bit angry because he had been ridiculed in the assembly of Yadus. Someone called him a eunuch. So, didn't like that. Not only that, but when someone calls him a eunuch, the Yadus laugh very heartily. And so, Jargamuni was quite disturbed. So, he decided he was going to get revenge. He worshipped Lord Shiva for 12 years by eating powdered iron. And then Lord Shiva gave him a benediction. You can have a son especially dangerous to the Yadu. So, there was one Yavana lady who, her husband wanted a son, and he asked Jargamuni, you please. Lord Shiva's potency, very fierce. Then Jargamuni told him, your action is in Mathura. You're dangerous to the Yadu. Basically, he's saying, become a part of Krishna's pastime. Make it very pleasurable. So, the demon did his part. He attacked Mathura. And Krishna began to consider what to do. He began to deliberate with Balaram. The two supreme personalities of Godhead began to make a plan. Krishna pointed out to Balaram, it's not only that Kalyavana is attacking, but we also have to consider Durasanda is going to attack any moment for the 18th time. It could be possible that while you and I, dear brother, are dealing with Kalyavana, that Durasanda then attacks Mathura and captures our relatives or even kills them. We have to consider these things. Just see. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has no limitations, no peer, he's talking to Balaram like, it could be possible that while we're handling one demon, the other demon gets through. This just adds suspense, it adds drama to the pastimes of the Lord. The Lord is indefeatable, but he acts like he's got a worry. This is real enjoyment. When you have no worries, but just for fun, you act like you have worries. It's hard for us to understand. We don't like worries. We don't like anxiety. But Krishna has no worries. He has no anxiety. So, as a supreme enjoyer, why not pretend you have some worries and enjoy in that way? For Krishna, worrying or no worrying, it's all Satchidananda. Just different varieties of bliss. Okay, today we shall experience the bliss of worrying. Balaram, what to do? Doesn't look good. We can handle Kalyavana, but Jarasandha too? What about our relatives in the city of Mathura? They'll be disturbed. So, Krishna decided, time to relocate the whole dynasty. And he arranged to build the city of Dwarka in the ocean, in the face of this double attack by Jarasandha and Kalyavana. Such a wondrous city beyond material calculation. Palaces as tall as skyscrapers. Each home palace had its deity of Lord Vishnu. All the demigods provided the best that they could offer for the glories of Dwarka. And in fact, they offered back all the powers that Krishna had delegated to them as demigods, showing that the devas are completely dependent on the Supreme Lord. They offered back all their delegated potencies, their respective powers. So then, after the city was constructed instantaneously, what did the Lord do? In the middle of the night, as his family members slept in Mathura, the Lord transferred them by his mystic potency. He relocated the whole entourage to Dwarka, the new city in the ocean. So what happened? When the Yadus woke up in the morning, they were in this majestic city. They were surprised. Where are we? This is Krishna's relocation ability. One minute you're fast asleep in Mathura. The next minute, the whole city is transported to Dwarka and all the inconceivable opulence of Dwarka.
Then again, we have to consider, how can you move Krishna when he's everywhere? What is the need for him to go from this spot to that spot?
Krishna has no need. He has no desires to fulfill. Namam karmani lumpanti. Name karma palay viha.
He's got nothing to achieve. He's already full in himself. He doesn't need anything. He's not missing anything.
Whatever he does is just for pure pleasure.
As long as you have a need, then you have some limitation.
But Krishna has no need.
Still, he does things.
And this is what, this paradox is what gives Uddhava such pleasure.
In fact, the pleasure gets so intense that Uddhava says, I get bewildered by all of this. As Prabhupada writes, for example,
now remember, this is going on after the apparent departure of Krishna from this world.
For example, Uddhava knew perfectly well that Lord Sri Krishna is eternally existent and can neither die nor disappear for good. Yet he lamented for Lord Krishna, even though he knows. Still, Krishna is able to stir the heart, stir the bhakti bhava so expertly that even Mantri, the advisor to the Lord, Uddhava becomes bewildered and laments, oh, Krishna's gone, what to do? These are the wonderful things about the Lord's pastime.
Now we're going to get a chance to render some seva this weekend by moving the Lord from one mandir to another. This is also a contradiction, as we pointed out, because Krishna is everywhere.
But he's taken the form of the Archavigraha to allow us to serve, so that we can increase our devotion. Krishna doesn't need us, but we need the opportunity to serve Krishna. Therefore, the Lord appears as the Archavigraha in such a way that we can render service. We should always remember, Krishna has come. How can I take advantage of the opportunity and render service to the Lord? We don't want to miss the opportunity of serving the Archavigraha of the Lord.
Everyone says, if only God was here, then I would do so much service.
So the Lord, he is there as the deity incarnation.
If we treat Krishna in a callous way, oh, he's standing there every day, what's the need for me to become so enthusiastic?
If you treat him like that, then
Krishna will reciprocate.
As you treat him, he treats you. But if you take the presence of the Lord so seriously, then Krishna will take you seriously.
And that is the aspiration of every bhakta, every devotee.
Please, my Lord, let me render service to you so that you'll take it seriously. May the quality of my devotional service be such that you are pleased. In order for us to develop in that way, Krishna comes as his deity and he lets us think what is best for the Lord. Just like the residents of Vrindavan, led by Upananda, always consider what is the best thing for Rama and Krishna. Let us go to another place simply for the pleasure of Rama and Krishna. And so we also have the opportunity to think, how can we act for the betterment of Sri Sri Radha Giri Hari? What is best for them? How can we contribute to their seva? And in this way, maybe by doing some humble service with dedication, Krishna will take notice of us, and then our life is successful. Are there any questions? Comments from
Bless your five times.
There's competition between the Lord and the devotee. The devotee is thinking everything for Krishna, but Krishna is thinking everything for the devotee. It goes on and on like that eternally. We're always fearing, maybe, that it's going to be one-sided. I'm going to do so much for Krishna. And will Krishna notice? Can Krishna really deliver? But in the competition between the Lord and his true devotee, Krishna cannot be defeated except by one person. He admits defeat at the hands of Vrindavaneshwari. Otherwise, no. And that is all by his desire to become subordinate to love. Even though he has no desire, he has nothing he needs, still, he likes love so much, he agrees, I'll come under the control of love. So, the devotee is thinking, what is best for Krishna? And indeed, we have to learn that Krishna is thinking, what is best for the devotee? In all kinds of circumstances, we should think that way, and sometimes the circumstances become a little difficult and we need help how to see that Krishna's thinking what's best for me. Who is the best example of being able to see Krishna is thinking of my best in any situation? Bali Maharaj, the prime example of Atmanivedanam. Bali Maharaj was cheated by Lord Vamanadeva. He lost possession of the three worlds in a few moments. Yet he saw the beauty of this. And he commended the Lord. You have done so nicely. You've taken away everything from me. You've made it easier for me to be a devotee. This is why Bali Maharaj is glorified. He could see the beauty in the Lord's giving and the Lord's taking. In all circumstances, he was determined, I'm going to be a devotee of Krishna and relish what the Lord does. Because I know Krishna is simply acting for my benefit. Yeah?
When the residents of the Guru return to the Dwarka, what happened to the Guru? Where the path starts, so that the world is over.
Mathura is the eternal Dham, so obviously in the eternal Dham there is eternal Leela. Krishna told Balaram, take care of Mathura.
So some people died in somewhere.
There will always be devotees in Mathura. Other questions? All glory to the Lord.